Congrats to the Golden State Warriors on their fourth title. Are they the team the Nuggets are going to have to get through in the West next season? Plus, what do we learn in these 2022 NBA playoffs? And, oh boy, it's trade rumor season. Let's go. Woo.
You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On Network. Your team every day. Thanks for making this your first listen every day. We're free and available on all platforms, including YouTube, where you can join the show and chat all things NBA and Nuggets with us on the daily. Today's show is brought to you by Arcade 1UP. Locked On is partnering with Arcade 1UP to give away three free NBA Jam Shaq machines. Stay tuned for later in the show to learn how to enter. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network. I'm joined by my colleague, my co-host, my partner in crime, my good friend, Adam Mares, at Adam underscore Mares. You and I gotta get together, buddy. We need to get together and have dinner with the kids. I haven't seen you in too long.
It's true, man. Well, guess what? Guess what? Today officially begins the off-season.
I'm done writing the game, guys.
Not really, though. It's actually like the busiest week of the year.
Yeah, exactly. No, for me, it's free agency, man. Free agency is nuts.
It's a 2-week stretch. Really, summer league is the official like last week of the season.
Yeah,
it's weird because then it's really the first week of the next season, but it really feels like the end, and then you got 8 weeks or whatever off.
Yeah, it's like the year starts and then they take 3 months off and nobody does anything or two.
Although, guess what? Jokic is throwing us a bone this offseason. We're going to have early September. He's going to play some basketball for us to talk about.
Oh, man. I missed this. Oh, boy.
Yeah, he's playing in Eurobasket. So he's committed. He'll be September 2nd, first game for Serbia. So we'll see him a little bit earlier than we expected.
I wonder who Nuggets fans are rooting for. All right, so today we're going to talk about the Golden State Warriors winning the NBA title. We're going to talk about what we learned from the NBA playoffs. And then we got some trade stuff to go through, including the Dallas trade for Christian Wood and some news regarding the Denver Nuggets. We'll get into all that and more on today's show. Let's start here. On Thursday night, the Golden State Warriors secured their fourth title in 8 seasons, beating the Boston Celtics handily in a game in which the Celtics jumped out to a big lead and the Warriors said, that's cute, and then absolutely proceeded to roll over them. The Celtics could not stop turning the ball over. I wrote a bunch of stuff over to Action last night on lessons we kind of took from this series and these finals and the Warriors title. I think this Warriors team, honestly, Adam, is my personal favorite. This is my favorite of all of the Warriors teams that have been. And the reason is I like that they kind of had a more sense of like how hard this is. Like they knew, like the first one was like, hey, whoa, the big deal is. And then the second one, they lose in the finals, they get back and they have Kevin Durant and the seven, but it's easy, but then it's kind of uncomfortable. And the 18 and 19 ones is a little uncomfortable with the whole KD thing. Like talking to them, you could sense that they were grateful for the titles, but they were also exhausted from all those games. They take 2 years and they're injury plagued and Clay goes down and all this stuff happens and it takes them 2 years to rebuild. And they come back this year and they don't go out and get a 4th star and they don't go out and make any sort of like super team moves. It's just back to kind of like the 2015 team. And they were a slightly humbled, which is odd because I'm just like, you don't need to be humbled. You had injuries for 2 years. But really, when you look at it, Adam, 2019, KD and Clay both go down. This team has lost one title fully healthy. And if you count Andrew Bogut, as long as they have their starters, this team hasn't lost an NBA title since 2015. I mean, an incredible run.
And I don't like what we only analyze what happens, not what could have happened. But I think you could even make the argument that the Draymond suspension, same thing. Like, I'm not trying to take anything away. It happened. It's part of the story. He earned the suspension, like all of that. But I'm just saying I think it's hard to sit here now and say that team really fully healthy, fully on the roster, whatever. Nobody really has proven that they can beat them for whatever that's worth. And I think that's part of what's so cool about the Warriors here is there's no doubt. This is what we do. And we can do it with a lot of different parts around the periphery because the core of who we are is special. It's a cool story. And one of the cool parts about it, if you were to ask, I think these guys have even said it, for them, Steph, Draymond, Clay, rank the championships by favorite to least favorite. The KD ones would come in dead last by a long shot. And that's part of what, it's not the only story, but it's part of the story of this season. And it's part of the story of the last 10 years. The super team era has taken some big L's, some big losses. And yeah, the non-superstar super teams in that era have shined the brightest in a way that I just think is, at this moment in time, unquestionable. And I just wonder if there's ripple effects to people saying, I want to do it that way, not this way. Giannis, the Warriors, minus the KD stuff, Toronto even to a certain extent. Like, these teams that have done it, quote unquote, the hard way or more organic way or whatever you want to call it, it's just been a little more special. And nobody, in my opinion, nobody represents that better than the Warriors.
I have a lot of thoughts. I want to start here. Talking about this kind of the concept of enjoying the championship. Experience is great in this regard. I'm really thankful that I've gotten to do this for long enough that I can actually differentiate between how guys react in the moment. The happiest I've ever seen any single human being. Any single human being.
Really? Any human being? Wow.
I'm sorry. Okay. The second happiest. The happiest was when, in Avengers Endgame, when the portals open and all the Avengers come back, my kid.
I love the
my kid. Yeah. That's the single happiest I've ever seen a human being.
Such a great portal.
The second happiest is Dirk Nowitzki walking by in 2011 with the finals MVP trophy.
Yep.
I've never seen a person so like, just look, this is the moment. Like, I'm honestly, in the moment.
Go through it over the last 10 years. You could go through, like, if you were rating genuine happiness. By the way, Damian Lillard did this, right? He talked about, I always look at guys and I wonder, are they really happy or are they just putting on a show? If you rank the guys by where they appear most happiest, in whatever order you have, you've got Steph last night, you've got Dirk Nowitzki for certainly 2011. You've got Giannis. Like, you could go through the list and say, like, the guys, Kevin Durant, 2017, 18, probably not. Probably wouldn't go that high on those. I think LeBron in 2016, you could make a real, like,
yeah,
that one, like, was genuine.
There are titles that are, like, the 2012 title was really for him about relief. It was just like,
I'm no longer
the guy without a title. The 2013 one was like, that was a hard title to win. And there's a lot of satisfaction with it. The 2016 title, he was crying. He was weeping. It meant so much to him. And like last night, you saw Steph like really overcome with emotion. Like, Steph was really emotional last night. And that was really awesome to see about how much that meant to them. And yeah, I do think that this has to do with like the way you win it matters. It's right. Not just no win it all at any no cost. Question. The no way question. You win it matters. Another thing I would like to talk about.
Oh, real quick, I just want to say, Kobe also has a great line. If you remember when he won number 5 against the Celtics, somebody asked him that, like, and most times guys will say they're all different, you know, this or that. He was like, no, this is the best one because it was the hardest one to get. And then, like, there is this, like, the harder it is, the more rewarding it is to accomplish. And there's no question about it. This one was special in that regard.
Yeah, but Kendrick Perkins was out. So let's, I do want to kind of comment on this because I retweeted, I quote tweeted Harrison last night because he wasn't the only one that did this.
Oh, it was so great.
Last night was very, this is what's great. Here's the pattern that we have, okay? The Bucks shell out. They give up 5 draft picks for Drew Holiday and they go deep into the luxury tax and they win the NBA title. And the following offseason, they let PJ Tucker walk because they say, well, you know, it's just PJ Tucker. Do we really want to pay this much in luxury tax for PJ Tucker?
Now, this is my music right here.
Now, look, I do want to say, like, there are people in Milwaukee that are genuinely like, I don't know that PJ Tucker for this team genuinely was worth it. I think that may be true, but you needed to devote those resources somehow somewhere else and not just be like,
thank you,
traction, right? And the very following year, the Bucks do not have the wing depth because of a trade that they made for Serge Ibaka.
And an injury. I mean, I still think the Bucks win this one if they have Middleton. I think this is their title.
I agree. I agree. But the margin for error closes, right? The
margin for error, yeah.
And then you've got Lacob. And here, honestly, as much as obnoxious as Lacob is for the arrogance, here's what I love about him is that they didn't just do this with like light years, which they preach that throughout their organization about being ahead of things and being aggressive and being pursuing. But like, their move wasn't to go get another mega super ultra star, which trust me, like they chopped around to try and see what those options were.
Right.
Jonathan Kuminga played a role in this title. He wasn't in the finals, but he played a role in this title. Yep. You know, Juan Toscano-Anderson, Nemanja Bjelica.
You're reaching too far down the list, in my opinion. Like, there's more obvious ones. Because, first of all, Andrew Wiggins is, like, yeah, the big expense. Like, they did that. But then you just look at it and think, Jordan Poole was an investment that they made over 3 years. And mm-hmm. it was one they stuck with, which is, in my opinion, somewhat analogous to a Bones Highland, in that you knew he had some talent, he had some flaws, he was taken late in the first, but, you know, he could do this, but is he a championship piece? And they invested in him over a three-year period, and when it got over the hump, he became part of the knockout punch. And then Gary Payton II, the last guy added, much debate, should they do it? Should they save the money? It cost them, what, $13 or $14 million just to add Gary Payton as the 15th guy on the roster? And guess what? He closes in 4 out of 5 games in the finals. Like, he was an absolute margin. That Gary Payton, to me, is perfectly analogous to PJ Tucker, in that you could go through series, you can go through stretches where it's like, yeah, what does he matter? He's just a guy. But then when you get the matchup where it's like, actually, we need him to do this thing because it allows us to do all these other things, it becomes essential. Can't live without. Those margins absolutely matter. Yeah. And the thing, when you're getting to ownership here, for me, the Warriors, their ability to spend that kind of money because of how smart they've been as business people to make that a money-making machine, all of the things they've done, but also the willingness to do that, not just say, hey, what does it matter, the 15th guy? No, we're going to pay like $13 million. Like, that's as high as – that's the cost of like your fourth best player for most teams. That's what they paid for their 15th best player, and it yeah. ended up being the difference for a championship, in my opinion.
Yeah. So ownership matters, man. You want to set the bar. Like, this is the whole thing, is no one is going to say Joe Lacob was cheap. No one.
Right.
No one, you know, I made an NBA Finals 2023 bet last night. I bet on several teams, but I made one bigger one. I bet on the Los Angeles Clippers to win the NBA title in 2023. Now, I bet on the Denver Nuggets last year, and I'm not going to do that to you good people.
Thank
again.
You.
I did bet on the Warriors at the same time last year, so it's not like I was completely yeah. jinxed. But
I bet on the Nuggets last night.
There's good value. I can't deny it. I need to see what they do with the wing depth. I'm ready to bet on.
Well, if they do a really good job there, the odds will be different. Part of it yeah. is just like this hedge on.
Yeah, it's like the whole thing I'm trying to manage is like, it's certainty versus value. That's what you're always trying to like right. factor in, but.
I'll just say this. I watched the Warriors go through this playoffs, and they went 6 games. First of all, and I know this is going to, people might roll their eyes at this, they did not have Gary Payton for the second and third round. They did not have him for game one of the finals. They did have him for the entirety of Ooh. The first round. They had him for the last 5 games of the finals, of which they won Ooh. 4 out of 5. The Nuggets went 5 games. And by the way, Jordan Poole, I went through the numbers last night, 11 of 20 on pull-up threes against the Nuggets. 12 of 46 the rest of the way. So yeah. 55% in against the Nuggets, 20% against everybody out the rest of the way. Like, I don't, some of this is on Denver and how they guarded him, but some of this is, man, they caught the best three of Jordan Poole's number one, number two, and number three games came against the Nuggets of his playoff run.
In my opinion, the Warriors played the best that they have versus the Nuggets. That's the best that they have played.
And did Denver, honestly, especially like, I know the first 2 games they get blown out. I think, again, I personally think there's some reasons for that are not necessarily Denver's fault. They're getting a team that nobody had ever seen before. They came up with a strategy that was actually a bad one. They adjusted. Games 3, 4, and 5 of that series, Denver played them as well as, in my opinion, as anybody else played them in that entire stretch. And I just, not that that's a big consolation, you lost in 5, but I do look at that and I go, you add the actual Nuggets roster, and I just am not convinced that the healthy Nuggets this year would have not at least been on par with the Celtics, with the Warriors, with the Suns, with all these other teams. When you see the chips fall, I go, they're right there.
This is ideal for me, because this is the whole thing. Is like, there's a lot to love about the Warriors. I hate when they were inevitable. They weren't inevitable this year. They were beatable. Yeah, nobody figured out how. Like, nobody figured out how. And people will talk about John Morant getting injured and the Nuggets guys being out and all these things. It's true. And that's just like the way the cookie crumbles, so to speak. But there's a lot, I think, to take away from the margin is not. So, this is the whole thing, is that the margin is not so high for the Warriors that they're unbeatable, but they deserve credit for still being the best.
Well, I have an interesting, I want to, on that, on segment two, I have a take specifically about the Warriors' unbeatableness, because I agree with you, but there's like one little caveat too that I kind of want to put in there.
Well, let's get to that after the break. We'll do that. And we'll talk about lessons from the 2023 playoffs when we come back. But first, it's that time, friends. Oh, yes, it's that time. My. I've got to tell you about Built Bar. New box came in the mail for me.
Best Buy. I have a new top one. This is the top one.
It's Mud Pie. That's right. It's Mud Pie.
Number one.
They've truly outdone themselves with their new Mud Pie flavor. And for the first time ever, Built is introducing the new Mud Pie flavor in both Mud Pie Bar and Mud Pie Puff. Not sure what Mud Pie tastes like? Well, if you're a chocolate fan, you better sit down for this. The new Mud Pie Bar is rich whipped cream and chocolate mousse, smothered in 100% real chocolate and topped with cookies and cream crumble. Oh my. You gotta try the Mud Pie as soon as possible. And you need to hurry because the Mud Pie Bar and Mud Pie Puff are only available for a limited time. Visit Built.com to taste the deliciousness for yourself. Plus, that's right, they're covered in 100% chocolate. They've also got 16 grams of protein and only 150 calories and 8 grams of sugar. All this, and it's healthy. How amazing can it get? You're gonna love the new Mud Pie Built Bar Puff. Whether you need a snack for your workout, a late night treat, or just need to grab a quick bite, Built is a perfect protein bar, and they taste better than a candy bar. Chocolate mousse, whipped cream, cookies and cream crumble. Stop drooling. Get to Built.com and order your box of Mud Pie bars and puffs now. You won't regret it. Go to Built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for making this part of your day and your first listen each and every day. We do have a request for you. We need a favor. We need a favor from you. We're putting together a survey so we can learn more about listeners like you and make your favorite Locked On podcast even better. Please don't just get Matt out of here. Don't do that. This is your opportunity to tell us what you like and don't like about Locked On Podcast. Go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey right now to get started. It won't take very long, and everyone that completes the survey can qualify for a chance to win one of 10 $100 Ticketmaster gift cards. Take our audience survey. Go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey. Thanks for your help. I also want to encourage everybody to check out Locked On Avalanche, as the Avalanche look to go up 2-0 in the Stanley Cup Finals. Oh boy. Almost there. Three more wins, baby. Three more wins. All right, back here on Locked On Nuggets, second segment.
Three more wins, and the Kroenke secure their second championship of 2022.
And we'll hear, and at only the cost of $8 million. So, what do we learn from these playoffs? That's it. Here's what's great. Okay, this is the part of my job that I really truly love. It's trying to separate out results from process and context and circumstance. Like, yeah. I love this part of trying to decipher, like, well, okay, like all these things could be true at once. The Warriors face the Nuggets without two starters, sure, and the Grizzlies without John Morant at the, I'm not taking this away from them, but like the Grizzlies, you know, the Grizzlies
they,
without
they
John
did,
Morant.
They did face the best version of the Grizzlies. You're right. They did face them without John.
Rude. And then they face like a Mavericks team that I don't, I'm telling you, like, I'm just, that's a pretty Blazers ass 2019.
I know, it really is. It really is. I mean, in hindsight, too, like, the Suns just had COVID, it turns out. I'm not trying to give him
that COVID. Like, it might have. Man, I don't.
I will say this, though. Zach Lowe had a thing on a podcast last week where he said the Warriors, for whatever reason, never feared the Suns. That was one team they were always confident. They just knew they could beat. And we never got to see it, but they did talk about him as if it was like, yeah, guys, come on. It's like, come on, get out of here. And part
you
of me,
I know why, though. That's personal, because they just, for them, they're just like, Chris Paul's never going
to
beat us.
But part of, they might have been right about that. It's my only point. And we never got to see it. But part of me wonders if it's like, they just knew they had that team. They're like, no, we know what they do. We can take it away. They didn't take it away, but we do.
I was so mad the Mavericks won, because like I had talked constantly since their December. Their December meetings, those two teams play twice in a week. I said from that point on, I was like, the Warriors are gonna beat the Suns in the Western Conference Finals. Like, yeah. I love the Warriors over the Suns.
Yeah.
We'll never know.
We'll never know.
That team and this team. But you know, I do think trying to make sense of it is very difficult, because it's like, where do you slot the Suns in all this? And where do you put, you know, I guess let's start here, because this was a key question from our title of the episode. Are the Warriors the team that the Nuggets need to be thinking about countering most next season? Now, I will warn, you shouldn't do this in general. You should just build the best version of yourself and have options. You need to be able to be good at multiple things. Getting into, like, we have to have a specific matchup. The only exception is things like, oh, we're going to have Al Horford for Joel Embiid, or we're going to have, like, one specific defender that gives this guy trouble. Other than that, Like, I think you get in trouble trying to gear your team for one, because you'll face the other good team, and that's entirely different. But
by the way, I think this might happen in Denver's favor, though. I can't remember if we talked about that on this show, but teams do seem to be gearing up for not the Nuggets. Like, the Nuggets are the only team that you have to gear up for them in a specific way. You got to get extra big. And I do wonder if Denver's 2 years of hibernation have made teams think, oh, we got to build for the Warriors. We got to get small. We only need one center, you know, all of this stuff. And you get into a playoffs and all of a sudden they're like, oh crap, we don't have a backup center. Our guy fouls out in the third quarter every game. Like, oh no.
Yeah.
Could work out in Denver's favor. You're asking like the takeaway. This is actually gets to the big takeaway, which is we're framing it as, are the Warriors the team to beat? I don't think so, because I don't think there is a the team to beat. I really don't. But there's something that we learned from this across both conferences that I think is very important. The league's very good. There's enough diversity of skill set, talent, how you win, that you have to simultaneously be extremely malleable, which both the Celtics, in my opinion, both the Celtics and the Warriors were defensively. Yes. They had the ability to say, Jordan Poole, you're so essential in this series because the other team doesn't have a guard that can punish you defensively. So you're going to win that series for us, a la Denver. Then you can have a Gary Payton who's like, you can't score in an empty gym, but guess what? We need you to guard so-and-so, so you're our guy in the series. So defensively, they had that malleability, but offensively, the Warriors are the one team that no other team has solved. That the Celtics held them to like a 113 offensive rating or what have you, and I know you're going to mention the turnovers and fast breaks and this or that. We're 10 years into this. They just always generate them. They always sign them. If you can do it every single time, then maybe there's something to it. But the Warriors, to me, it's not that they had the 120 offensive rating, but they had enough that Steph Curry and like when you saw the knockout punches in these last games, even including yesterday, second quarter, end of first quarter, second quarter, they're just playing that beautiful style basketball. They get in that rhythm that nobody can knock them out of. You have to burn two or three timeouts in a row just to be like, maybe this timeout will throw them out of that rhythm.
I mean, this is part of it. Like, actually, you mentioned all these things, and you're right about like they deserve credit because the defense really is their core. That was the right. core of them in 2015. They were the first team to lead the league in pace and defensive rating in NBA history.
Between them and the Nuggets really is that they can beat you with a 113 offensive rating and make it look like they're on fire, and then you look at the numbers and you're like, well, it was pretty good. It wasn't elite.
I mean, here's the thing. Defense. You can build an entire scheme to slow them down and a roster to slow them down, which Boston did. They had the best defense in the league for 6 months. But if you can't score enough, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Like, you have to have that balance. It's so important. Like, you can't just, no team is going to be able to just be like, we're a defensive slug team. That's who we like to get in there and play, you know, real rough and tumble, like grit grind. It doesn't, you can't. You're never going to outpace them. They're too good. So, like, you'd better be, and I don't think the other way works either, where you're just like, well, we're just going to outpace them with scoring.
Right, right. You got to have some kind of balance. But here's the thing. I don't think anybody can solve Denver either. And the Warriors are a great defense. And Denver didn't lose that one because they failed to score on them. They scored a ton. They just couldn't get stops. And it does make me wonder, you add Michael Porter, you add Jamal Murray, I think that offense is going to be fine. Like, there is this level of, can Denver become... It doesn't matter about – I think elite defense is almost overrated. It's, can you be malleable enough that no matter what the situation calls for, you can slow them down to have a 113 offensive rating, because Denver's going to have a 115 or better offensive rating. I honestly believe that. And if you look at the teams that didn't have to go to like a plan B or C or whatever offensively, it's really just the Warriors. Everybody else had to do something unique. Jason Tatum, their best scorer, not a factor in the finals. He got taken away. I don't think that we've seen Denver get taken away offensively really ever. Agreed. And that's the thing that I think is a little encouraging.
You know, I think a good way to think about this is like calibrating the right configuration, right? Where, let's put it in numbers. It didn't have to be the numbers, but I'm just trying to like use this as a, if we're going to put this in kind of empirical terms, the Celtics held them a 110, but they weren't, because they held them to a 110, they weren't able to get above a 108.
Yep.
So maybe you get to a 112 and you're able to hold the Warriors to a 111.5, and that, like, that differential is enough. You give up 1.5, whatever it is, you have to find that equilibrium in order to get past them, and nobody's been able to do that. This is a really good point in the comments, and I wanted to talk about this. We learned that's not important regular season at all, only to secure the spot and be fully healthy at the beginning of the playoffs.
Some truth.
Well, I want to kind of like put the Warriors in context of this. The Warriors jumped out to the kind of start that Michael Malone's always talked about, right?
Oh, that's a great point.
They got out.
They bought them a lot of grace.
They were 18-3 on December 1st. I looked it up. They were tied with the Suns at 18-3. So when Draymond goes down in January, they survive it. When he comes back and Steph goes down, they survive it. They were able to get a good enough record that they didn't – everyone was really panicked by those injuries. I was concerned about the Draymond one because it was a back, but I wasn't panicked about it. The Steph thing was crazy to me because if you read these comments, you can always kind of tell. If you pay attention to the local coverage, the local guys will usually tell you, like, hey, this is a pretty serious thing. They're worried about it. The comments from the Warriors, though, were very indicative of just like, yeah, no, Steph's not back yet. We're going to take our time. We've obviously got to be ready for the playoffs. And then, like, the underlying tone was always like, he should be good to go for the playoffs. They let him – they didn't rush him back to win regular season games. They were just like, no, it's fine. And they could do that because they still finished with the third best record in the West.
Yep.
So that tells you the importance of starting off well.
So true.
Like, if you rack up those, you know, Malone's right. If you rack up those wins early, that buys you time to get guys healthy. You can go through a stretch where you're like, they're actually 6-10 in their last 16 games or whatever. You can do that.
It's so true, man. Because there is a difference between being the third seed because you were able to take your time on things versus being the third seed and you kind of sprinted from January to the final to the finish line because you needed home court. I love this point. You're right. Michael Malone talks about it a lot. You're right that some of the times when the Nuggets have had the best record, they've survived injuries in large part because they had, what did they start, like 10-1 a couple years back? And they've had some really big starts that have propelled them. I think it's a great point. There is a difference between Denver the last two seasons where last season, after they get Gordon, Murray goes down and they still sprinted to the finish line to get a three seed or two seed or whatever they were, but they were exhausted. This is a fantastic point. One of the takeaways for sure that we should have from the Warriors' success this year.
And then finally, I think a really good thing that the Warriors kind of taught us. If you really look at this, this wasn't like overwhelming. Oh my God, they have three Hall of Famers. It didn't feel like that. It felt like they have one Hall of Famer and they had two really good role players because Klay's had an ACL tear and Achilles. That's crazy, by the way. Klay Thompson came back from tearing his ACL, getting back, then tearing his Achilles. And then a year later, he plays half a season and helps them win an NBA championship. Like, that's just an incredible story. You know, Draymond didn't look the same, and he hasn't. And part of that was Boston's scheme.
He looked the same in Game 7, but you're right that for
I'll
push back a little bit. Draymond was really great. His peaks were really high in this playoff run, but his valleys were really low.
I would agree. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I always talk about this, like, age and injury take consistency from you, not the peak. He said he was dominant in Game 6, and he was right. He was dominant in Game 6.
Game 6, yeah.
But, like, the difference here, though, I think is, you know, they had Steph and then, like, a core identity of a team that moves the ball and plays high-level defense. That's replicable for the Denver Nuggets.
No question.
A Hall of Fame player, Nikola Jokic. If they can get the guys around them.
Buy-in. They had buy-in. Who is the least bought-in player that was in the rotation? Honestly, like, this is a tough question. Who's the least bought in person in the regular rotation? I'd say Jordan Poole, maybe.
Jordan Poole.
He's like bought in. Like, I mean, he's very bought in.
He's young. That's it.
He's just young. But he's extremely bought in.
That's the lesson to take forward, I think, for Nuggets fans. Let's take a break. We'll come back. And there was a trade in the NBA this week I wanted to get to and get your thoughts on, as well as there's some rumors out there that we should dive into as the NBA draft approaches in
1 week.
Less than a week. Thanks, NBA, for scheduling that.
Oh,
in that 1 week.
It's Thursday. Oh, no, it's Friday today. You're right. Less than a week. Damn it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Crazy. No, not a full week. Not a full week for you, sir. Woo! That is not how. All right. Well, we'll definitely come back. But first, we're going to talk about Arcade 1-Up. Boom, shakalaka. We've got big news. The one, the only, NBA Jam is back. Arcade 1-Up, the leader in at-home retro arcade games. They've got so many cool games over there. I used to play all of these. There was an arcade in where I grew up called Monkey Shines. I used to play most of these games in that arcade, including NBA Jam. They've made it bigger than ever with a, wait for it, Shaq Edition machine. Okay. People are obsessed with NBA Jam, and I'm thrilled to tell our listeners that you can once again play hoops with NBA legends in this arcade classic. The thing I'm most excited about with the Shaq edition is that, like, Shaq was amazing with Orlando. That was my favorite version of Shaq. I love Penny Hardaway so much that Penny Hardaway was actually, like, I named my first dog Penny. That's how much I loved Penny Hardaway. So I'm very excited to play with Penny again. Jumped clear across the court and set the ball on fire in one of the first sports games ever to feature real and digitized NBA licensed teams. No fouls, no free throws, and no quarters required. Compete with friends and family through all new Wi-Fi leaderboards, making you more connected than ever. Pre-order now from arcade1up.com. That's arcade, the number one, up.com for an estimated early September ship date. Arcade1up is the place for fun. They've got even more classics like Golden Tee, Mortal Kombat, and many others starting at just $399. Check this out. They're giving away an NBA Jam Shaq edition to a Locked On listener. Enter for a chance to win a game console for your man cave at arcade1up.com/lockedon. That's arcade, the number one, up.com/lockedon. You've got till July 8th to enter to win NBA Jam Shaq edition console. Don't miss out. Enter today. Who are you going to play with? We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for making this part of your day. The first picks of the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft have been made. Search now for Ultimate NBA Mock Draft and get over 50 insiders, the Odyssey Sports experts, the draft experts of Locked On NBA Big Board, and more. We made a trade, and then it was rendered completely irrelevant by what happened this week. But still, you should listen to it to get my thoughts on what we decided to do with that pick at 21. The 5-episode Ultimate NBA Mock Draft is underway. Make Ultimate NBA Mock Draft your second listen today. Back here with Locked On Nuggets with Adam Mares. Let's just start right here. On Wednesday, the Dallas Mavericks decided to go ahead and go get their big man. The more I looked at this move, the more I liked it for Dallas for a number of reasons in terms of managing it. Not from a talent perspective, but what they decided to do. The Mavericks send their 26th pick, Boban Marjanovic, Trey Burke, and Marquise Chris, so end of the bench, not key players for them, to the Houston Rockets and get Christian Wood. Wood represents a substantial upgrade on what they were looking for, okay? They needed to be able to play five out, but also be able to play bigger and not be crushed on the boards and be able to have some rim gravity. Dwight Powell was just not able to give them the kind of rim gravity they need, and you need that with Luka so that you can't just blitz him the way the teams.
Well, I wouldn't say you need it. You can play five out, and that's very effective too. Or you could play four out with a rim roller, and that's equally as effective. So it gives them that secondary look for sure.
Well, I also think that you need a counter to the switch because the Golden State Warriors gave them a lot of trouble when they faced a team that was actually very good at switching. And the Suns honestly weren't this year because Dario Saric, I think, was out. I think that was a big part of that too, as well as the COVID. So having Christian Wood being able to slip picks or punish smaller matchups, those types of things, I think is a really big addition for them. The reason I actually really like this move for Dallas is more that they looked at the landscape, and this is based off of what I've heard. The price for John Collins is going to be astronomical. It's just very, very high. I think John Collins is like the best fit imaginable, but if you're not going to get John Collins, Christian Wood is a really good, and they got to market early. So they're not trying to work like four different angles and then get screwed because fine with other places and a trade option goes away because somebody comes in with a better offer. Dallas got to market first and we're like, hey, we want to get this done now. So they go get Christian Wood. They commit the assets to him. They've got the ability now to look at the rest of their board and say, all right, we've got Luka. I think they're going to re-sign Jalen. We'll see what they do. We have Christian Wood now as the center replacement that we needed. Now we can configure around that. Even if Wood is not the ideal version or this maximizer, he's good enough, especially for the assets that they gave up, to be like, all right, can we make everybody else good enough around Luka to get us back to the Western Conference Finals and improve? That was why I liked the move more than anything, is that instead of going for, because like, honestly, all the options for big upgrades are pretty flawed. Like Rudy Gobert comes with a lot of caveats in terms of like, various things.
He's also really expensive. I mean, I don't know. Gobert's still interesting. Is it impossible for them to get Gobert now?
Yes.
The 26th pick was for Gobert was like a sweetener for a Gobert package. It's wild to me.
No, like I would say that the bigger problem is that like the Jazz were not going to want, like the Mavericks were going to have a hard time getting together an offer, period, given what the Jazz want for Gobert. Right.
That's part of what I think about this move. Like, cause I'm with you in that I think it makes them better. How much better? The Mavericks are a team that have never quite fully been in like the rebuild mode and don't have the ability to go all in. And that to me, this looks like a team. I'm like, does it make them better? Yes. Am I afraid of them? First of all, this is another move that I'm like, yeah, he is. He does make it harder for Jokic to guard. I do think that would be an issue like in a series, but like, come on. Wood's going to guard Jokic in a playoff series. He's going to make an impact there. Like, they don't have anybody to do that. We'll see if they add one, but
no, if it's Dallas versus Denver, they're going to game plan to outscore Denver.
We'll see what Dallas does, but doesn't it feel like Dallas, that's a move for everybody but Denver? And this is what I mean. Like, if you lose Ayton, that's a move for everybody but Denver. Like, there's just a couple teams that seem to be making the move for everyone but Denver, where I'm like, interesting.
Yeah, Denver is not the concern now. Like, they're basically like, and I think a lot of this honestly is because of the defense, man. That's to me is the read is if you're Dallas, you're like, yeah, Jokic is going to score 40 a game. We're going to put up a 120 offensive rating because they can't guard anybody.
Right.
Like, Denver's going to have to prove they can guard. Period. Yeah. You know, and if they win, then everybody will be like, shh, I got to figure out what the hell to do with this Denver team, you know? So that's kind of my take on that. I don't put Dallas above Denver in the standings. I think they're still pretty equal on most things. I don't think Wood's enough of an upgrade. I think Wood, I will tell you that there were times when Wood I've seen be like, oh, hey, that was better defense than I expected. And then when he's not checked in, it's miserable. It's so horrible. So a lot of this is going to be about how does he fit with Kid? Like, how does he fit with Kid? Is he bought in? Because a lot of this was also like he wanted to play with James Harden and play for a contender. And then he wound up like between you and me, I don't really blame him for being checked out when Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green are the ones handling the ball.
Well, I was going to say, I think he's played on a bottom two team in the NBA his entire career. First Detroit and then Houston. So like, there's a difference between I've just never been on a winner versus I've always been on a team that is trying their hardest to lose. Like, you just don't know how he'll respond. He doesn't know what he doesn't know.
Also, by the way, not having Boban on a competitor in the West, probably a good thing for Denver. He's given them trouble through the years. Elsewhere, Kevin O'Connor reported on The Ringer this morning that the Nuggets are trying to package picks to move up into the middle of the first round. I'm trying to think how to put this. I definitely don't think that that's wrong. I think that they are looking at all options. I still lean towards the idea that they would, like, to me, I think an ideal for them would be package 21 and something and keep 30. I think that is still kind of like what they would like to do. But if somebody was like, hey, 21 and 30 and you can move up to 15 or whatever, great. Don't know who they want right now.
So that would be the first thing, is trying to identify a player that they want. Because first of all, 21 and 30, we both kind of agree that probably gets you to 15, 16. It doesn't move you up that much. Like, people would rather have the higher pick, usually, generally speaking. But where do you think that gets you?
In this draft, probably pretty high.
So Charlotte has 13 and 15. So they have two picks right together. You might be able to look at that if you're Charlotte and say, well, you only want one of those guys, or, you know, move back, whatever. So
I have heard that they are targeting the same position with both picks, which kind of makes me think that they're okay if they get, as long as they get one of their guys.
Oh, okay.
I think that they would probably move the other one. So I would say that 15 might be doable.
And then Houston has number 3 and number 17. They also, like, when you talk about a team that how much high-end talent do they want, they probably still would stack up on it. But there is diminishing returns. If you've got Şengün, you've got Kevin Porter, you've got Jalen Green, you've got the number 3 pick this year. That's 4 guys that you're kind of hoping turn into all-stars. You add a 5th guy you're hoping there. Like, at some point, you cannibalize yourself. So maybe they're interested in trading out of that second pick, that 17 pick. So those are the teams. So 15, 17, somewhere in there, if you were talking about trading to move up. And that might be good enough to get you a guy like Tari Eason, who I know is a guy that most people look at and say, hey, that's a good fit for Denver. Chai Ogbaji, another wing, you know, defensive-minded wing. Those two guys sort of fit the mold of player we all think Denver is most interested in.
Josh Winger in the comments asked, do you think they can get up enough for Sohan? No, I don't. I think Sohan's probably going top 10. That's just based off of what I've heard so far. I think there's a bunch of guys in the 8, 9, 10, 11 range that are all kind of on the cusp of slipping and sliding. AJ Griffin, I think, is in that conversation. I'll say this.
It's possible. At this time, because I'm with you, I wouldn't bet on it either. But, like, I just remember Michael Porter was falling in the draft from 3 to, like, 7. And he ended up falling to 14. And it was one of those things where everyone's like, what? And then afterwards, it comes out the intel about the back and all this. But I just say that to say you never know when there's a guy that's like, oh, you didn't hear? He's got a this or this that nobody's been talking about. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I guess there's a question. What would you like to see them do? Like, would you like to see them move up to get a mid-teens pick?
I mean, I'm pretty skeptical of the idea about a rookie making an impact on a championship run next year. I mean, I think if you're a Warriors fan, you got as much as you could have possibly hoped for out of Jonathan Kuminga this year. And he was useful, to your point, getting him to that point. But it was only to a certain point. Then it was like, hey, we actually need a different type of player, a different caliber of player. By the way, one of the storylines here, a very young Celtics team. I mean, young in that they hadn't really been in that position before. And I do think there was a level of sort of panic. The Warriors, this was their most calm run to the finals outside of the KD era. Like, they lost a game by 50 points and it just was like rolled right off them. And I think there's something to JJ Redick used the phrase mental. What did he say? Is mental endurance or something like that? Mental stamina. And to get to the final, like to win a finals, you have to have mental stamina. I think the Warriors demonstrated that a lot this year of like, we lost by 50. Guys, it's a game. This is a marathon. We're only halfway through the run.
Yeah, whatever.
And I don't know that in like rookies, young player, Denver's going to run into this too. Like they're going to have that mental stamina, that calm when you are down 2-1 or you lose a game by 40 or a player goes down that you thought was an integral piece of what you were trying to accomplish. So just another
option. Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of it is Malone gets so much grief for the rookies, which at this point I'm like, look, RJ Hampton played, Bones Highland played. You know, Zeke Nagy was a young guy that was set to play a lot this year before the injury started hitting him. I just don't know if that's necessarily accurate with where Malone's at in the rotation. Like,
my thing wasn't a comment on Malone. It was more.
No, I know, but that's been a thing in the comments. Earlier that there was just like a commentary about like, but Malone doesn't play rookies. And it's like, well, he has. So at some point it's like, okay, but I will say, you know, to your point, like Kuminga, when you get to the level to which mistakes are absolutely so crucial.
I don't know.
Let's imagine that you gave up an average of over 20 points per game in points off of turnovers in the NBA finals, just like theoretically.
I love that bothers you. It just cracks me up that's the piece that bothers you.
It's so, because so much of it, like I went back and watched all these clips and it's just, the Warriors defense deserves a lot of credit for speeding them up and making them uncomfortable. But you don't ever, on very seldom of these, do you go just like, ah, well, you gotta live with that one. Most of them, you're just like, what are you doing? Are you drunk? What are you doing? It's so insane.
I think they really confused Jason Tatum in this series as part of it, they really confused them, or him specifically. I don't know. I can't take that away from the Warriors. They're good at it. They're really good at it. It's a part of their identity.
Fernando mentions Dale and Terry. I think that's a pretty good option, but I'm not sure that you want to use two picks to move into a range to get Dale and Terry.
Yeah, no, he's a 21 or 30 guy.
Yeah, so I don't think you need to do that. Like you can probably just be, if you really want Dale and Terry, you can either take him with your pick, or if he's like a few spots above, just throw in something and probably move up a few spots.
I see some of these names, Beauchamp, Koloko. I'm actually like both of them. I don't love either one of them. I like both of them. I just don't think either of those guys make an impact on the championship run next year. They make an impact maybe on a regular season, like the top end. You're like, hey, they really came through for you in January when so-and-so went down. But they're not helping you beat the Celtics. They're not helping you beat the Clippers.
Right.
So now, I would rather if they have two picks, I would rather that turn into a player. Like that, to me, the Nuggets can make a couple compelling trade packages right now for an interesting player if they so choose.
Let's comment. Chicago and Minnesota have picks in front to the Spurs. So the Nuggets are targeting Nikola Jovic. They need to, Jovic, to swap just to jump in front of the Spurs. They are 20th and we are 21st. I would be a little bit surprised at this point. I'll say this. If the Nuggets are going to take Jovic, then they have done a really good job of throwing me off that scent. That's what I'll say.
So. Yeah, I would be pretty surprised there too.
Anything else you got for us?
End of the season. I really do feel it's kind of fun, man. Like one thing I said on Locked On NBA yesterday is that I feel like this wraps up a trilogy in the NBA. The COVID trilogy that started with the bubble that went into the condensed season that was last year of 72 games and then culminated with this season, which was the like condensed offseason into a season. I almost grouped those 3 years together. And now I feel like we're back for the first time to regular seasons. And I think that's an underrated sort of storyline, is that next year will feel like the first normal season since 2019.
Never imagined I would appreciate it as much as I do. I'm just like, and honestly, it's not even me. I feel less burned out than ever. I'm actually like, I'm super excited for the draft. I'm super excited for free agency. I'm ready to go. Like,
because it's new.
I really am. Just I there's a certain part of me, even though I know I need the break, that's just like, I kind of wish there were games tomorrow. Like I kind of wish I could like get back into the season. But got a long off season ahead of us. Lots to cover here on Locked On Nuggets. We'll keep it covered for you as we head into draft week. I'll be back with a solo show later today, heading into the weekend. Get you set on some various NBA topics, things that I have heard. Check that out over the weekend. Have yourselves a great weekend. Enjoy it, folks. The off season is officially here for everybody, not just the Nuggets. We'll see you guys again next time on Locked On Nuggets.